There's always something really unique about a conference track and field championships, especially one where you pretty much got to be on the road to nationals in order to score or get a point or finish 10th and wonder what happened. That is what it's like competing in the Great Midwest Athletic Championships track and field outdoor championships. It's tough. It is hard. You can have the day of your life and finish 14th in your event. Or you could go into an event expecting someone who's owned it all year and watch them have it all fall apart. It's crazy. Track is a cruel, cruel mistress, but it also brings some of the biggest highs that you will ever experience. And we saw a lot of that today. It was a fantastic day. And guess what? We have return of weather problems. I know you've all missed it. You've wanted to hear me complain about it. So I will just a little bit, but probably not as much as I'll complain about it tomorrow night. But there's a lot to talk about. There's some phenomenal things. I've got this much energy and it's 11:05 and I spent 13 hours at the track. Let's jump in. Let's track the Trojans. So obviously a lot more on the slate today than yesterday. Had pretty much everybody jumping into the fray. And so it was a busy day that started quite early. Now, I mentioned on the intro that we had return of weather issues. We did have weather delays today that amounted to the running events starting about 90 minutes late, which in the grand scheme of things, 90 minutes late is not that bad. We had roughly a four-hour weather delay at Myrtle Beach earlier this year. We've competed in the sleet. And the fact is, we didn't even see the lightning any of the times it struck today that put us in that weather delay. NCAA rules state that within a 10-mile radius, if there's any lightning, you got to shut it down. And so obviously, as frustrating as that can be, we appreciate those people that have our safety in mind, and we're taking care of us today. Looking at the forecast for tomorrow, which begins in 55 minutes from where I sit at the moment, it definitely looks like we'll be seeing the lightning. So no idea what tomorrow is going to look like, no idea how long it's going to be, but to be truthful, to get through a spring with only one meet, having actual weather delays, we'll take it, you know, even though we ran in sleet at one point. But that's enough about the weather. We should jump right into everybody's performances today, because it was a special day in TNU track and field history. And we'll jump right back in where we left off with the multis. We'll start with Hannah Sims and Molly Sims. They got their days off. Starting off in the long jump in the HEP, it's the first event of the day. Now, we can't talk about that long jump without talking about, I don't want to speak ill, but just the ridiculousness of where the board was. Obviously, you want to have multiple pits so you can jump multiple directions depending on the direction of the wind. And the pit that we were jumping from today basically had a massive dip leading in to the board. I don't know the slope. I didn't, obviously break out, a plumb line or try to get a level out there and see just how bad it was. But it was bad enough that you could see it in a picture. And what that meant was, is as the athletes would run in, they would actually be coming down into that board with a little more force than they would have been sprinting up, which honestly, when you're trying to plant that foot on the board and drive your other leg, it actually it's probably going to throw you off. And looking at the results, I mean, there were some good results today, but especially in the multi, I think a lot of people were a little under what they're typically used to jumping. You could tell it was throwing them off, and as much as you try to get an athlete prepared throughout the competition to say, hey, look, okay, this is what's happening, prepare for it. It's not something you practice, and as something as technical as the long jump, as all field events are, it's a tough adjustment. Hannah had a best jump of 4.02 meters, which is obviously a good bit off her best for a total of 312 points. And Molly jumped 3.96 meters for a total of 299, also off of her best. And you could just, it's just tough. And after the dip to the board, there's actually a slight rise in as you approach the sand. So it's not ideal. No excuses. They didn't make them, but this is me as a coach who was watching it, and it's just a tough adjustment to make. Next, they moved on to the javelin, where Hannah had a throw of 26.56 for 412 points. Not a bad throw for her at all. And Molly had a throw of 31.78 meters for a total of 510 points. And we were really excited to get her in the jav today. to basically get a small session in before she throws in the open tomorrow. And we know the few things we need to work on. We're hoping for a big PR, which would obviously equal a school record as well. But for the second time this year, I ended up in a bit of a discussion, if you will, with the javelin judges. One thing I've discovered throughout the year, the way the USATF officials look at some of these jav throws, it's just not consistent. And typically, if the javelin lands flat and it's questionable, you make your judgment call, you couldn't really say for sure. That typically goes to the athlete. That's what we've seen throughout the year. And, you know, Hannah had a couple of throws like that. I believe Molly might have had one. I can't remember. But at the end of the day, it's a judgment call. I had them pulling out rule books. You know, I knew I wasn't going to get anywhere because even if I appealed to the referee would have told me it's a judgment call and they're going to go with the officials. So it's tough. The sector where the jabs were landing had about 3.5 inches worth of grass in it. So who's to say what would land where? But we moved on from there, excuse me, to the 800 meter where Hannah dropped a sick PR of 3:08.10. I honestly thought through the first lap she might scare 3 minutes flat. I mean, she went through on pace for that through the first 400. And that gave her 294 points for a total of 2,872 points. So over 100-point PR for her, got her 13th. Molly did not run the 8. It's something we kind of discussed if she just wasn't feeling it. And thankfully, because the heptathlon stands separate technically from the meet, excuse me, everyone, because it stands separately from the meet, it doesn't cost her the ability to enter into the jab tomorrow. We obviously got that cleared with the officials. And unfortunately, I can't give you what her point total was through the sixth event because I couldn't pull it up on the computer tonight. Because if you don't finish the last event, it doesn't register you as completing the event. So it doesn't show you your final total. But I do know that before she pulled out, she had PR'd already. And that's without running the 800. And I think part of that is she had a decent jab throw. She did pretty well in the high jump yesterday compared to how she's done in the past. So a great multi for those two. Looking forward to what they both can do tomorrow in the triple jump and in the javelin on their own. Excited to see how their season will wrap up tomorrow. Lucas finished up the decathlon today. Started with a very strong 18.1 310-meter hurdle, which was a PR for him, and scored him 512 points. So that's a huge adjustment from what he did at Lee. He also had next he moved to the disc where he threw 23.41 meters for 337 points. Also better than Lee. That was kind of our thing. It's like, let's just be a little better than our last decathlon in each event. And technically we started the day out saying that we were just going to go kind of easy in some of these events, because, you know, we were trying to save him for the 400 hurdles later. We'll tell you how it all ended up fleshing out. Unfortunately, I was not there for his pole vault where he jumped 2.35 meters, which is significantly less than his best. Only netted him 210 points. Then we went into our first weather delay between the pole vault and the javelin. But when we did get a chance to throw the javelin, Lucas decided to just cut loose and threw 39.37 meters, a solid 4 meter PR. Got him 433 points, finished him third overall in the event, which was exciting and definitely meant that he was on his way to a great time. Now, we knew heading into the 1500, he's obviously probably the favorite. He won it at Lee, and the guys in the competition knew it. And he even had a guy from Malone who had been talking about a recent time trial where he had run around 430. And so Lucas knew to watch him. This is the guy that was directly behind Lucas in seventh. And if he stuck it to Lucas and put ground on him, it definitely would have pushed Lucas back into seventh, still in the points, but would not, you know, obviously we want 3 and not 2 points. Three's more than 2, so let's go for it. And Lucas' decision was, I'm just going to go out and feel it out. And he did. He settled into a pack. And this guy from Malone just was staring at Lucas, just staring at him. I mean, literally looking him in. I've never seen anything like it before. You know, typically when you mark a fellow runner, you just get behind them or you just run beside them and kind of look out the corner of your eye. This guy was just staring him down. And so I said in the middle of the race, I yelled at Lucas. I was like, nobody just stares at you through a whole race unless they're scared of you. And from what I've been told, that was not taken too kindly, but it's the truth of the matter. If someone's watching you and not running their own race, then they aren't necessarily concerned with what they can do. They're more worried about what you might do. And with about 600 meters left, this guy went. He made a move on Lucas, and Lucas ran right on his heels. And I remember with about 500 to go, I yelled at Lucas, I was like, hey, you're a cross-country runner. You can do this. This is something that you have within you. And, Lucas stayed with him, and with about 300 to go, got by him, put about 4 seconds into him, and won his second DCAT 1500. So Lucas is currently undefeated in the Decathlon 1500, ran a time of 4:43, which got him a point total of 426. Overall, it's too late to be drinking coffee, everybody. That's why I keep coughing, and I'm drinking coffee. Overall, he scored a total of 4,929 points. That is a 302-point improvement on Lee. That is huge. That is a great improvement for him. I know we probably ended up going a little harder than we had planned on, but it secured him sixth place, then 3 points. I'll go back and look. I can't remember where Garrison and Luke finished in the past two of our other GMAC scores in the decathlon, but it is tied for, if not the best finish in the decathlon for outdoor. So we're super excited for Lucas. Definitely told him to get on his rear end and rest because he had about, 3 hours, 4 hours till the 400 hurdles. That was barring another weather delay, which we actually had between the Jab and the 1500. Would have liked probably another one for his sake, but it just didn't come. Elsewhere in the field events today, we had the disc. Madeline Brown had a best throw of 27.93. Now, by the time they did throw, the ring was wet, a lot of warming up and stopping and almost getting throws in and can really wreck the rhythm. Dylan had a best throw of 37.98, which actually bested Braden Miller's best throw of 37.4. Both of them ended up throwing outside the sector for their last couple of throws, which definitely probably took some distance from them. And then Argenis had a throw of 25.09 to wrap up his day as well. In the long jump, Aaron Barreto had a jump of 5.41. Israel Schammel jumped 5.01 himself, and Sean McKenzie 4.92. Once again, these are not their normal jumps. And looking at the men's long jump, there are guys that are on their way to nationals from this conference that just did not jump anywhere near where they should have. And shoot, by the end of the night, the long jump was in the straight dark back in that corner. Obviously, it was delayed from the weather, and there was no way to keep light on there. So I have no idea how they even watched the light of the board, but long jump was not ideal. I think everyone would agree on that one. Moving on to the track for the running events in no particular order, just as they were on the live results list that I compiled here shortly ago. In the 400, Andre dropped a 52.79, not far off from his best time this year. And one of the things you really like to see is consistency as you work through the year, and Andre only 0.04, 0.05 off his best time this season. So we'll definitely take that. It's a great springboard into tomorrow and the 4x4 and 4x1. Now, one of the interesting things about track, and I told you in the intro, track's weird, track can be mean, track can be great. Pablo came into the 100-meter dash seated like 20th, 22nd. I mean, tons of guys under 11 seconds. Pablo had never broken it, roughly 11.1. Wanted Pablo to run a good 100, warm up his legs for the 200. Pablo runs in heat one, drops a 10.9 and wins the heat, automatically through to finals. You win your heat, you move on. You don't even have to worry about the time. And the reality is, Pablo is the slowest qualifier into the final, but I think I've decided that means nothing. That's why you line up. That is why you race. You never know what'll happen. You never know when it's going to be your day and not someone else's, or when things will fall your way. But Pablo got out there and killed it, and he has put the first Trevecca athlete since the conference expanded into what it is, into a sprints final. It's historic. It's huge. Obviously, he broke the school record on that 10.9. Phenomenal race. Now, also in that heat was Aaron Barreto, and he is not showing up anywhere in the results tonight. We noticed something weird on the board with him. We thought it might be a DQ. We were not sure why, but I went back and looked at the results just now. It showed nothing. Not his name, not a DQ, nothing. So we've got an email in to figure out, Aaron, I'm sorry, I'm totally jumping ahead. Aaron ran the 200, and that's what happened. Hey, so preview, Aaron's time is not there in the 200. He did also run in Pablo's heat, so be prepared for that. Sorry, guys, once again, it's late. If you're listening, you're a loyal listener, and I'm sure you're cool with a slight mistake. Sean McKenzie did run the 100, ran 11.97, not too far off his PR, second time under 12 seconds this year, so that's huge. There's that consistency. Huge shout out to Brandon Bejarano, athlete slash coach slash team grandpa. He has brought these sprinters along. He's made it so that Pablo can get in the finals so that Sean can be consistent like this. Super excited for their performance in the 100. Also running in the 100 today for the women's side was Sarah Harder in a 17.08, which ties her PR. So you cannot complain about that at all. Promise I'll give you more details on that 200 in a minute. Just, you know, fired up that they don't have Aaron's time, so it was just on the brain. Women's 800, we had Maddie Farrell and Madeline Pulliam running in that. Maddie ran a 240.57, and Madeline Pulliam ran a 244.08, I believe just off one of her fastest times this year. Both of them had run the 1500 earlier, which I shall tell you about here in a minute. On the men's side, Hamza ran a 157.44, which, you know, Hamza, the way the 800 meters worked is you had to, if memory serves me correct, you had to win your heat, and then it was the next four times. And with championship racing for the 800 and the 1500, it's a crapshoot. You have no idea how it's going to work out. And for Hamza, we just kind of knew your best guess is just win your heat. And so we told him, hey, just go break the school record, and you'll probably win your heat, and you'll be in on time. Ended up taking roughly a 155 flat to get in, which would have been a PR for Hamza. His 157.44 was gutsy. He got out to the front. He forced a race. He was in it heading into the last 300. And that's all you can ask of any athlete. Ben ran a 202.45, also tried to go out hard. And Jordan Halliday ran a 204.84, with John rounding things up with a 215.75. Just a reminder, Jordan, Ben, and Hamza had each already run a 1500 tonight as well, which, like I said, we'll talk about in a sec. Lucas came back for that 400-meter hurdle. You know, he felt like, he said he felt all right, felt good. He looked pretty smooth over the hurdles. There were no real hurdle foul-ups, no stutter steps, just a little less gas in the tank than he's used to. Ran a time of 58.18, had a good heat. Unfortunately, was 0.15 seconds out of being able to get in. The way the 400-meter hurdles worked were, I believe, I can't remember if it was winner from each race, then six times, or top. I believe it was top two, then next four times. And Lucas was third in his heat, and then just the first time out. So really close. He was happy with it. I mean, it would have taken right around a PR, just under 57 seconds for him to get in. But at the end of the day, you know, even looking at the 400-meter hurdles on the front end, you know, 1 to 2 points, if it's a really good day, if he made it to the finals. But we secured ourselves a solid 3 points in the decathlon, which I think we can walk away super happy with. And I know he is, and we were definitely excited about how the way we worked those two events ended up. Moving on to the 1500, once again out of order. This was run before the 800 meter. On the women's side, Maddie Farrell ran a time of 520.58. Samantha Rosenkrantz shaved 2 seconds off her PR, ran a 520.61. Sammy Roberts dropping into the 1500 from the longer events, ran a time of 522.47. And Madeline Pulliam ran a time of 554.03. On the men's side, once again, it's crazy. Prelims versus finals, all that fun stuff. What it was going to take for the 1500, because they take 12 to finals, was either top three in your heat or next three times. Hamza ran a time of 404.87. The heat winner from, I believe it's the heat that Jordan was in, but it wasn't Hamza's heat, ran a 405. Hamza ran a 404. Hamza's on the outside looking in. That's just how cruel track can be, unfortunately. It's tough. You know, you have to roll the dice and say, do I want to be top three? Do I want to run for time? How do I want to position myself? The 1500, truthfully, and if you listen to our top 10 moments of the last 9 years, it is a chess match, especially when you get to this championship level, both in the prelims and then tomorrow, when they race that final, there's every chance they'll go out in 80 seconds for the first 400, which is pedestrian. It's so slow. But all that matters is how you finish. Time's out the window once you hit the finals. It's who's first, who's second, who's third, and so on. Jordan ran a time of 413.31, Ben Carr running a 4:15.91, not super far off his best time of the year, I think 2 or 3 seconds. And Shane just missed by a little bit his PR with a time of 4:26.75. Moving on to that 200 that I actually was so excited to talk about. Pablo dropped a 21.83. So not too far off that time that he just ran at Vanderbilt. He did not have the 2.0 wind, which is legal in the 200. So it didn't have that little extra push, but at the end of the day, the event that we were almost positive he would get to finals in, he was seeded fourth coming in, he ended up being 0.01 off making finals. That's like Jerry Seinfeld has a really funny skit from his early days talking about the difference between winning and losing and moving on. And it's in the amounts of seconds, like from there to there, from there to there. How much did you not make it by? Oh, well, from now to now. Like, that's probably even faster than that. And it's just super bummed for him. But at the end of the day, it's still a pretty busy day for Pablo tomorrow with a 4x1, the 100-meter final, and then coming back for the 4x4 later in the afternoon. And this is the event in which Aaron Barreto did run. We have no idea what his time was because it never really posted to the board. It's not on tonight's results, and there's an email in. I know that's repeated information, but you know, this is by the seat of our pants, and it's late. And then lastly, we come to the last event we'll discuss. It was the last event of the night. We had two people running in the 3,000 steeple. Jace ran in the first seat, ran a time of 11:38.76, about 8 seconds off his best time of the year. I said he felt a little pop in his knee, so it slowed him down a little bit. It was a little bit of discomfort. And then running in the second heat, you know, the quote, fast heat, the top seeded heat, was Cam Warner. Cam finished third in this event last year. And one of the big things he talked about after that, you know, third, was on the podium, he scored points, was, man, could I have gone earlier? Could I have done something different in this race? And, you know, at the end of the day, I said, well, you know, maybe you could have, but, you know, you finished third, you ran a good race, and here we go. And coming into tonight, he was seated second with at least one guy with a time faster than him, and times faster than him across the board. Nathan from Tiffin is a fierce competitor, has incredible 800 time, qualified for the 1500 earlier in the night with a 3:57. He's a great runner, and in the whole week leading into this race, even before that, knowing that he'd be in this race, I talked to Cam and said, hey, look, man, 1200 to go, if he's there, you're going to have to put a move. You're going to have to put the hurt on him fast. You're going to have to make him do something because if it comes down to you two side by side in a 400, man, I don't know how I feel about that. And so Cam took the race out, and through the first 120 meters, Cam got to the front, and nobody was doing anything. And the heat before them, a 9:33.1, which isn't a terrible time. And, you know, I'm watching them, I see Cam, I'm like, man, this is going to have to change. And they come around their first lap in like 80 seconds, give or take. And this is when I start yelling to Cam. I said, man, that first heat's going to beat you guys. You do this for the next, you know, seven laps and you're done, or six laps, you're done. And slowly but surely, the pace started to work out. Cam moved to the front, was cruising along. I wasn't looking at time. I wasn't yelling splits to him. And it was a pack of about five athletes, two from Hillsdale and a couple of guys from Tiffin, including Nathan. And as the race progressed with about 1,200 meters to go, it was still a pack of those five. And I was concerned. And I was just, I remember running across the field going, come on, Cam, come on, do it now, do it now, do it now, do it now. Just thinking that out loud, not even yelling it to him. And all of a sudden, the two Hillsdale guys ran around him and started pushing the pace. I was like, okay, Cam, as long as you're with him. Cam went with them and was right on their heels. But a little ways back was Nathan, one other guy. I can't remember if he was from Tiffin or from somewhere else. But you could see Nathan knowing that, hey, he's probably going to have to do something. So they come around to 800, two Hillsdale guys still out front. Cam's still right on their heels. I'm yelling, come on, you got to get ready to go. You got to get ready to go. Nathan's coming. Come around the 400. At this point, it looks like Cam's about ready to put a move on the Hillsdale guys. But at the same time, you see Nathan starting to make a push with about 300 to go. Down the backstretch before the third to last barrier, it looked like Cam moved ahead of one of the Hillsdale guys. Okay, so one down, running in second. Gets to the water barrier, jumps it, moves into first. But here comes Nathan. I mean, I'd love to know what his last lap was. I'd love to know what Cam's last lap was. But like I said, I just tossed the watch to the side, wasn't even paying attention. Cam gets to the last barrier, jumps it. With the last barrier, you have about 80 meters to go. And I'd say maybe a second after Cam jumped that barrier, Nathan came right behind him, and it was a full out sprint. Now, before I tell you how this finished, we early on during indoor, January and February, do this workout called accelerations. It's been a staple of the program. Typically, we have the group go out first thing in the morning and get a progression run in, tempo run in, maybe long run in, just to get the aerobic work. Because this acceleration workout, written by legendary coach Joe Vigil, is really meant to develop turnover and milers. It's kind of what it's geared to, but also really beneficial for anybody doing work on the track. And it's a short workout. It consists of running every distance by every 10 meters from 100 to 200, so 110, 120, and it's based off this formula, all this stuff. We do it for 6 straight weeks every Monday. This year we goofed around with it a little bit, and we did it for the sheer fact of, hey, everybody, we want to have this turnover speed in this group. Let's do it. And so we worked those workouts. We ran them in various conditions, but we did them and we were consistent with it. And we made sure the times were right. We made sure we were hitting them, not running the early side too fast and the back end of those sessions too slow. And throughout our year, we have seen it in the 5Ks, in the miles, in the 3Ks. We've seen that speed show up at the end of races. And I'm just sitting here thinking, oh, please, come on, tell me that comes and pays off tonight. As Cam had about 50 meters left, and sure, I'm sprinting across the field, about 10 meters behind him, in relation to the finish line as he was progressing, and we're all just sprinting. We're all going nuts. Tiffin's group's going nuts. It's everything you want track and field to be, everything you want a race to end like, especially these longer races. And I'm just hoping Cam can do it. With about 5 meters left, I realized, I was like, he's got it. Crosses the line, arms in the air. Nathan crosses the line 0.2 seconds behind him. Cam congratulates them. He gets bum rushed by our group, including me. It's one of those where it's like, I'm gonna have to walk away, or I'm gonna get a little emotional on this one. And I know it's been a tough spring for Cam. Obviously with everything with Eli Kramer and how tough that was for him. And it's just been a long road. His road early on at Trevecca was filled with injuries and just learning how to adjust to running and college life and all these other things, and seeing him turn into such a great worker, competitor, and leader, and to see him become the GMAC champion in the 3K steeple, I believe our first overall champ since Ben Maroney won the 5K at Cedarville the first year Malone was in, where he really had to lay the hammer down to put some OVU guys and Malone guys behind him. Almost positive that's our last individual title. But to have that moment, to have his team around him, we probably could send a lot more of our group back to the hotel to rest for the next day, but we really believe in supporting our fellow teammates. And what a moment that was for him. What a moment that was for our group, for our program. He's worked so hard at this and thought about this night for, I guarantee you, 365 days. I know he's replayed that race several times in his mind. And oh, by the way, he ran a 9:19.82. Which is a huge PR for him in the grand scheme of things. Only really 9 seconds off the Provo time for Nationals, though it does take a 9 flat at the moment. But just a phenomenal race by Cam. Well executed. Phenomenal race by every single athlete in that steeplechase. There hasn't been a race that good yet at the conference meet. I don't think anybody would doubt that, no matter what the times were. Just the way each and every one of those guys, really in the top five, executed was phenomenal. So here we are. We're at the end of the day. Men's team has 13 points, hanging out in seventh place, which we kind of projected ourselves to be in seventh, give or take. Women not on the board yet. Hopefully we can get a little something done tomorrow. Definitely looking towards the javelin for hopefully some points in that. We'll see how it goes in all events, because as we've talked about tonight, there's no way to know. So looking at tomorrow, we have the shot put. And we will additionally have the javelin, the triple jump as well. The men will run the 4x100, hoping for big things out of them in that. We have Pablo in the 100-meter final. We will additionally run the 4x4 at the end of the day. And then we have the 5Ks as well, with quite a few people going in that, hoping to lower some 5K PRs. And with Cam in the fast heat of the 5K, who knows, maybe even snatch another point from some other team's grip. So huge day. The reality is tomorrow, I might be. Re The reality is the last day of GMAC Championship podcast. Who knows when it'll be recorded? Because there's every likelihood that the meet doesn't start till 5 p.m. Which means we'll finish about 10, 11, and we're gonna crash a Waffle House for dinner on the way home. So that's kind of what we're looking at for tomorrow. Who knows what this weather's gonna do? We'll see what it's like when we wake up. But thank you for listening. Huge congrats to our athletes tonight across the board, every single one of them. For those whose seasons are over, hey, great job. Let's work towards next year. Let's start thinking about the things that we're gonna do during this off season and the fall. And how we're going to progress and make ourselves better and build off what we've done at this meet. For the rest that are getting ready to compete, they should be well asleep by now and getting ready for tomorrow. Thank you so much for tracking the Trojans with us. We hope you're back with us for the final competition podcast of the year tomorrow as we wrap up the 2022 GMAC Outdoor Track and Field Championships.